Merkle Media.
The driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people that really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed this plane was really low. It went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkle, and alongside of me is my dad, Brian Merkle. How you doing, Dad?
I'm doing all right, Tony. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. So, and before we go any further, if you have a story you'd like to share on the show, a wild, crazy experience, if you're a truck driver, an EMT, a police officer, a firefighter, anybody who drives for a living, if you have a story you want to share on the show, go ahead and shoot us an email or go to the website, hammerlanelegends.com, hit the contact section, and you can reach us that way as well. Now, Dad, we had some emails come into the show this week that I thought were really cool. And so I want to start off with, she signed it KW, so I'm not going to say her name because I'm assuming she doesn't want her name out there because right. I didn't tell her I was going to put this out. But KW writes in and she says, "Dear Tony, I wanted to share my thanks to all the drivers listening to your show. I'm sure I speak for many others. The last week in particular, I have been noticing just how many trucks are on the road, especially how many double and even triple trailers are out there. Maybe I'm just paying more attention, but it seems like there are more long loads. Seeing how many items are low or out in our stores, I am just so extra thankful for all of the men and women out there doing their jobs. I cannot even imagine what it would be like to get a long load up those hills and even down the other side. So from all those people oblivious to how hard our truckers are working, thank you for showing up at the stores. Thank you for accepting all the risks inherited in the job. Thank you for putting up with all the idiots zipping around you. KW." So I thought that was a nice little email from KW, just, you know, saying thank you very much to all the truckers for, in this time with coronavirus and everybody's being self-quarantined, we're still out in the road pulling freight down the highways, making sure that the shelves can be stocked as much as possible. I thought that was really nice.
That's really cool. Thank you very much, KW. It's really cool.
Yeah. And so she writes in, and then probably like a day or so later, we got another email from another listener, Jessica. And Jessica had some very good information for the drivers out there, specifically in North Carolina. So let me just read this email for you. And drivers, pay attention because this is a place that you're going to want to know about. "My name is Jessica, and I just got started on Hammer Lane Legends recently. I've been listening to the confessionals for a while, and I saw the video you posted from the truck driver on Facebook. Anyways, I'm not sure how else to get this out to truck drivers, but maybe you got connections. A friend of mine posted the attached image on Facebook, and I thought I'd share it with you. Lucky Lou's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina has takeout and plenty of parking available. Here's the address, drivers. 5124 Park Road, Charlotte, North Carolina. Zip code is 28209. And the phone number for this place is 704-919-1282. And they're open Monday through Friday from 11:30 in the morning to 2 a.m. And also Saturday and Sunday, they open up at 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Their website is LuckyLou'sTavern.com. And you can go ahead and check that place out. And their website is LuckyLou'sTavern.com. And she writes, I'm in no ways affiliated with this place, but I just wanted to try to do something for the truckers out there because you guys are amazing and keep everything going. Hopefully this helps a little. I'm not local to Charlotte, but I figure it's a good size hub for truckers. Please share it. So I wanted to make sure I shared it because right now we're hearing about truckers, you know, not even, I know it's changed now, but at first, truckers were walking up to drive-through windows trying to get some food, and they were being turned away because they weren't driving up in their cars. And it's like, you're a truck driver, you can't. And so, like, for a while there, for a few days, when they started doing these lockdowns, truckers were out there starved. And from what I was hearing, at least, there wasn't any place to go. So that was really nice of Jessica to write in and let us know about Lucky Lou's Tavern in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the address for that place, again, is 5124 Park Road, Charlotte, North Carolina. Their phone number is 704-919-1282. And supposedly it's a great place to eat, and they have plenty of spaces for trucks to be able to pull in and park and have some food. So I thought that was a good thing, Dad, you know?
Definitely. That was actually really cool. And I really appreciate the info, Jessica. That was really nice of you to send that along. And it's really nice of Lucky Lou's to keep themselves open and keep themselves available for people like us who are out there trying to do a job that, like you said, you can't get through the average, you can't get your truck through a drive-through. That's just the way it is. So thank you, Lucky Lou's, and thank you, Jessica, for passing that information.
Absolutely. So, Dad, we got a great show planned this week for everybody to listen to. We have Rob coming on, and Rob has a lot of different experiences, and it's interesting because Rob was part of the MUFON, which is the, I forget the actual initials and what they stand for, but it's the
Mutual UFO Network.
Yeah. Exactly. It's what you said. So, but he had some different stories to share with us. And, you know, he was fueling one night and something happened above his head. That's all I'm going to say. But it's very interesting stuff. And he has some great stories to share. So let's get to Rob right now. Today we got Rob on the show. Rob, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Good, great. Man.
I'm off today, so that's always good.
Well, listen, me and my dad appreciate you kind of being patient with us. We were just dealing with some technical issues and stuff. We thought we had a dead microphone. That wasn't the issue. We thought we had a dead wire for the microphone. That was an issue. It turns out the headphone wire was bad. So, and it's still bad. So we're piecing it together and we'll have to order a new wire tonight. But, Rob, I appreciate you being here. And, you are a trucker. You drive truck, and you have some interesting stories, hence you being on Hammer Lane Legends. And I just want to let the audience know that when you are hearing Rob share his stories and you're done listening to this episode, you can kind of hop on over to my other show, The Confessionals, because Rob is going to be sharing some of his other experiences on the paranormal type side on The Confessionals. So if that's your cup of tea, you can hop on over there and check out some of his other stories, because Rob, you were a MUFON investigator, right?
Yep, I was about mid-90s, probably 94 to 98, actually, when I got my trucker's license. My CDL was in 1998. And about that time, I stopped, you know, with the whole MUFON thing after I started driving truck because I felt I was too busy with that. Yeah. And then I came back in 2010 to MUFON, and then, so, yeah.
Right. Sounds good. So, we're not going to really focus a whole lot on the details of MUFON on this interview, at least. But just for anybody who's listening who has no idea what we're talking about, can you tell people what MUFON stands for?
Yep, it's the Mutual UFO Network.
Yes, so we're talking about UFOs, babies. Greetings, Earthlings. Right. So
it's not the Baker Boy truck driving around and Muffin Man. It's MUFON, not Muffin.
That's right. So, Rob, you drive truck now, but how did you get involved in the industry, man?
Back in 1998, I live here up here in North Dakota, and it was like a job fair that swung by my town, and I was like, I should get my trucker's license, because my favorite uncle, he got his trucker's license back in California in the 70s. And I've always known him as, you know, Uncle Donald, the trucker. And so I went, I applied, and I started for E.W. Wiley doing flatbeds, you know, over the road. And it was awesome. In fact, there's a funny story I got to tell you about this. We had a class of, there's probably about 8 or 10 of us guys that we didn't know nothing about trucks. We didn't know how to drive a stick shift, you know, nothing like that. And so after we learned how to drive and everything, we're going to go out on the road and we're going to actually take a load. And there was the instructor and then myself, and there's two other guys, and they're in the sleeper cab. And my instructor said, okay, let's drive over there. We're going to hook up to a flatbed over there, some steel, and haul that over like 20 miles. So we're like, okay, great. And so I backed up and we hooked up the truck and everything. And the instructor came back from the office and he says, well, all right, let's go. They told us where to go and we're driving. We get to our location. And he goes, okay, take the tarps and the straps off and they'll unload it. So we took off the tarp, but there's no straps. Nothing was holding that steel. We had 48,000 pounds of steel. Like steel I-beams, and nothing was holding that thing down but the tarp itself. And he goes, where's the straps? And we go, there wasn't any straps. It was just the tarp. And we're like, his face turned white. He was like, we're not mentioning this to anybody. But I felt pretty good about myself being a new driver. I was like, yeah, I didn't spill. I didn't cause a wreck. I drove great.
Let that be a lesson to the instructor. Make sure everything is done.
Exactly. I was like, whoo. Now when I think about it, I'm like, oh, man, that was dangerous. But, yeah, that's how I got my start, was in 98 doing flatbed.
You know, that's something that, like, could have ended your career before it got started.
It could have, yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if something serious would have happened there? I mean, not only would you not have gotten your CDL and that guy be fired and probably even anybody else, even in the vicinity, but you, like, if somebody could have, like, if somebody got injured, I mean, we're talking about jail time. Like, that's how serious this stuff gets. I mean, there was a town not too far from me. There was a new driver out of New Jersey. He had just had his license for a year, not one of our company drivers. This was like an over the road guy. And he goes down a road that was marked that the truck shouldn't be down there. He goes down anyways, following his GPS, and he comes across a covered bridge. And, you know, as a driver with,
you can see where this is going. Yeah. You know, you can hear it already.
Yeah, someone got stuck.
Yeah,
you know, like, as a driver that with experience, you say, "Well, I'm dumb, and I will get out of this. How? I'll back up."
Oh no!
But a new driver who is still a little nervous about backing up.
Yeah,
he thought the best course of action is to not back up, but just to test the bridge and see how it goes.
Oh, geez.
And so he starts going onto the bridge, a covered bridge, 10-foot height limit, a 10-foot height limit. And the top of his tractor, probably his windshield, he probably could see it, was hitting a beam. And he got paranoid and he floored it. Wow. And he destroyed the bridge, took the top off, made it across. But the town had just put about $1.5 million into that bridge, rebuilding it and everything.
Oh,
and, you know, he actually got arrested for that.
Wow.
And so, I say all that to say that if you would have lost that load and somebody got injured, I mean, we're talking about possible jail time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm surprised it didn't, because I even went on, you know, a curved off ramp. And nothing slid off. I was
thank God for that.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I'll say that bravo to the loaders, because they loaded a very secure load without actually strapping it in. I mean, I can't say the same thing for some loaders. I mean, sometimes I get on my trailer and I got like 5 gallon pails that are stacked 4 high, no straps or anything, strapping it to the wall. And it's like, it's because sometimes with my industry, you get your truck and your first delivery is skids. Like, say you have 5 pallets and they're boxes from floor to ceiling. You can't see what's behind those. So you just got to kind of trust that it was loaded the right way. And then you get those off and you see, oh, well, we have an interesting day ahead of us, don't we?
So, oh man.
Well, so you got into the industry by a job fair. I don't think I've ever heard anybody starting their trucking career through a job fair.
Yeah, that was me. I did it.
No, that's really cool, though. I mean, you're starting to see more and more of that. I know the company that we work for, they're starting to do job fairs, and you see them, you see some of their social media commercials and stuff like that for them to do the job fairs. It's something that's becoming more and more, especially in the trucking industry, because they're really, you know, we're so shorthanded in the trucking industry that they need drivers. So that, you know, I think it's a good idea. It's a good way to do it. It's a good way to get at least some possible applicants, you know, or at least possible people who are, you know, like our company. We you know, our company has started the company I work for, they have started, you know, apprenticeship programs and stuff like that just to get people in, because it's such a hard industry to get people to do anymore.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, kudos. That's cool. That's a good way to go.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what, the industry's hurting for drivers, but it's not hurting from suspending people.
No.
Because I got suspended this past week. I had a day of suspension that I had to serve on Thursday.
Oops.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do anything illegal. So I did my job legally correct, but the company just started a new policy where when drivers like me pick up freight that is poisonous, instead of just putting it through the computer system that we have poison on the load, they want us to actually call into the terminal and tell the dispatch that we have poison on the track on our truck, so that they can turn and tell the dispatch or the dock supervisor. Dock supervisor can turn and tell all the dock workers, so that everybody knows that Tony Merkel is bringing back poison. So we're not supposed to take the poison. So everybody's looking for the poison, so the poison doesn't accidentally get loaded onto a trailer next to a pallet of food, because that, you know, ruins the food load, and you got to pay for that. And I guess that was happening enough for them to change some policies.
Yeah.
And so, so they changed it. They changed the policy. And so now we have to call it in. Well, within the first 2 weeks of this new policy, I pick up poison and I don't call it in. And the next day, my boss says to me, hey, did you call in the poison load you brought back? And I was like, damn it. And I was like, so what am I going to do? Get fired now? Because it's like they made it a big deal. Like they were like, this is like a zero tolerance kind of thing. And I went into his office the next day and I asked him what my fate was. And he said that I was going to get a day suspension. But he was waiting on the paperwork because I was number 83.
Oh, wow.
Company-wide.
Truck drivers.
I was the 83rd person to do it in a two-week span. And and so I was like, well, I guess I'm not as dumb as I thought. You know, or maybe we're just all so really dumb that,
you know. I think that's more closer to it. I shouldn't say closer. It's more close to it.
It's okay, Dad. We can make up words around here. We're not worried about, you know.
Exactly.
But so anyways, that's my little story from the week. But I mean, I'm not saying I'm perfect, but we all make mistakes. And, you know, I just had to pay for my mistakes this week. But so, Rob, you get started in the industry and you threw a job fair, and you have how long have you been driving?
Since 98 when I got my CDL. And then I drove for about a year and a half, and then I started driving taxi after that. So I was like, oh, I don't want to drive truck anymore. I was 23, 24, somewhere in there. And then I started back up again In 2007, started driving truck again. So between there, I drove taxi and went to Bible college.
Well, I've been to Bible college myself and stuff. So, it's an interesting route that we've taken, isn't it? We went to college and we both became truck drivers, but, talk to me about the taxi driving, man. So you didn't tell me that you were a taxi driver.
Yeah.
You have to have some stories from that.
Man. Oh man, I got great. In fact, you know, that whole Y2K,
yeah.
You know, the year 2000, everybody's going to die, end of the world type stuff. Well, 2000, I spent my New Year's Eve with a hooker and a pimp. They're in the back seat. I must have picked her up from her work or something. And I was taking them to the truck stop so they could go eat or something. Or I don't know. But, yeah, that was one of my taxi experiences, man. I've had a lot. You know, when I was driving taxi, I had my I was going to Bible college, and I called it my mobile pulpit. So I had this is kind of a cool story. It has nothing to do with trucks, of course, but when I was driving my taxi, I picked up these people from the bar, and they were just drunk, like just drunk. And they said, "Take us to our car. It's at, you know, some other bar." And I'm like, "Oh, I shouldn't be doing this." And I had my Christian music on, and that song, "Our God is an Awesome God," you know, came on. And all of a sudden, the lady, she starts singing it. And I'm like, huh. And then all of a sudden, the guy, he starts singing it. And I'm like, well, shoot, I'm going to turn it up. So I turned up the music. And then I swear, when they got out of the vehicle, they were as sober as can be.
No way.
Serious. I was like, huh, because I was thinking, I was like, should I call the cops on these guys? You know, they're gonna kill themselves. What am I gonna do? You know, I was kind of in a dilemma. And you know, we just started singing, and then we got to the spot. They're totally sober. I didn't smell any alcohol on their breaths, you know, nothing. They got out, they, you know, their words weren't slurring, they weren't stumbling around like they were when they got in. And I was like, huh, our God is an awesome God.
Wow. So you're telling me that they became, like, God made them sober.
Sobered them up on a car ride.
Sobered them up. Yeah, he gave them some of that new wine instead of that old crap they were drinking.
Oh, snap. Jesus turned water into wine, and he kind of reversed it. And he's like, let's turn this wine into water.
Yeah.
I like it.
I'll tell you what, that's actually really cool. That is really neat.
Yeah. So then I got married in 2007, and that's when I went back to driving truck, because I went preaching, you know, went around the world traveling, preaching, went to Russia, Finland, Norway, all these different countries, Russia, South Africa. And then I came back and I, you know, met a girl, had a wife, you know, did the marriage thing, and started driving truck to make ends meet.
All right. Well, before we transition into you becoming a truck driver to make ends meet and stuff, were you an evangelist?
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Wow. Talk to me about that. It's not every day I get to talk to an evangelist. I mean, obviously I've talked to them, but,
sure.
You know, traveling the world and stuff. I mean, you must have.
Yeah, I was one of the first Americans going to the Russian prison system to preach the gospel.
How'd that go?
It went, you know, at first you're kind of nervous, you know, you're like, they want your passport. We pulled up to this one prison, and it was like a hard labor camp. It was a little bit past St. Petersburg, Russia. It was out in the woods, and it looked like something from a World War II, you know, concentration camp type movie, you know, and you couldn't see anything around. You just saw this gray wall, you know, falling apart, cracks in it all the way around. And then so we're waiting outside, and it was me and two other guys and our translator, and our translator went in and let them know we're here. And they made us wait outside for an hour, which is normal, you know, they wanted to show their power, I guess. And all of a sudden the alarm starts going off, and these dogs start running, and all these guards start running, you know, with the dogs. They're doing exercise, but we didn't know what was going on at the time. And the country over there, it's so, you know, it's poor. And the guys were even wearing, like the guards, they'd be wearing Nike tennis shoes with mixed match, you know, camouflage, you know, running. It's like whatever they could find, that was their uniform for the guards. And so pretty soon they called us in, and we went in, and they said, passport. And we gave them our passport, and they handed us a little square piece of metal, about an inch by 1 inch. And they said, and it had a number, like, you know, carved into it. And basically they said, you keep this with you, or you don't get your passport back and you're a permanent resident. So we held on to those for dear life. when we walked into the prison, it was the kind of prison that during the winter when it snowed in, it was survival of the fittest. Whoever was the strongest survived. And if you didn't have family members to bring you food, which they allowed, then you starved. And all those guys' face, their heads were shaved, their face were sunk in, but they were happy to see us, and they were happy to accept the gospel. And it was awesome. And the warden was actually let them build an Orthodox church in the yard, because in Russia they have a state church, it's Orthodox. But to go inside the church, you have to be Orthodox. If you're not Orthodox, you can't go inside the church. So the warden, he must have been maybe atheist, I'm guessing, because he was like a general in the army or something like that. And he wanted to show us. So he brought us into this Orthodox church that they were building. And this inmate comes around the corner and starts yelling at us. He didn't see the warden behind us. He starts yelling at us, like, get out, you know, in Russian. And then the warden popped around, and he saw the warden, and his face went white. And two guards took him and carried him away. We never saw that guy again, so I don't know what happened to that guy. But
he received the gospel.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. So hearing how a prison is overseas like that, I mean, that sounds like something out of Prison Break, right? The TV show.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder what goes through somebody's mind knowing that if they get caught committing a crime, that awaits them. Like here in America, it's like a vacation. You go in, you get meals, three meals a day, you get some rec time, you get to, you know, I mean, some of these prisons are freaking a cakewalk. You know, right. Ask Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, we're not going to go there, but you know, if I was in another country and I had an ambition to do something bad, I'd really second guess it, knowing that that's what I had to go to. That's scary.
They should do like prison swaps, you know, from USA to Russia or USA to
Mexico. What a great idea.
That would be crazy, huh?
There'd be less crime here, and like 1 month we'd have less crime. People would be like, no thanks, I'm fine.
You've heard of foreign exchange students?
Yeah.
Let's educate you.
Prisoners, yeah.
Oh, man. That's incredible. So, Rob, have you ever had any experiences out in the road? I know we're going to talk about some things that happened in the rail yard, I believe. But have you ever had any experiences out in the road that kind of caught you off guard in the truck? Like, for instance, I've seen accidents happen that, you know, scared the crap out of me. It didn't happen to me, but it happened right in front of me. Have you ever had anything that happened to you? I know you haven't been driving for 22 years because you had kind of taken a break there, but did anything ever happen to you that kind of that you've seen and just like, wow, did I actually see that?
I did. I was in an accident. I was driving line haul overnight for this company. And when I'd go down to Fargo, North Dakota, and I'd be empty, and then I'd come back and I'd be loaded. And we just had, you know, a bad storm, blizzard, lots of snow. And so I was going like 45, 50 on the highway because there were snow drifts and stuff. I was driving careful. The plows weren't out yet. And I saw a vehicle coming towards me, and it looked like it was going pretty fast, and you could see him just hit the snow, just hit the snow drifts. Boof, boof. You know, the snow would just come up over the car. And I'm like, oh, man. So I took my foot off the gas pedal just in case. And I had that feeling, right? And all of a sudden, I saw her. It was a girl. She hit the snow drift, and her car started fishtailing. And I was like, oh, and then she got into my lane. We're going to hit head on. I was like, oh, no. And the ditches were super steep. And so I pulled over as much as I could because I was fully loaded. I pulled over as much as I could without dropping off. And I thought she was going to hit. She just missed me. So we almost hit like head on. But she hit so hard. She had been going like 65, 70, not caring, you know. Just she hit me so hard. She hit my back trailer, driver's side, my axles, popped all four tires off. You know, they blew, bent the first axle, actually bent it. And the rims cut her car like where her driver's side is from the hood to the passenger door, like cut it like cheese, just from the rims of my truck, just like she hit so hard, it was like, rrr. And so I got, you know, I stopped the truck and I saw her and I looked back in the mirror and I saw her car flipping around all over, ended up in the ditch. I called 911 right away and they said, can you go back and make sure she's okay? Or, you know, make sure the person's okay. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to. I think they're dead. That's what I told the 911 operator. I was like, I think they're dead. Oh, there's no way. And so I get out, and I'm going over there. I couldn't find my flashlight, so I'm using my phone, you know, as a flashlight. And I go over there, and here she's in the passenger seat. She got thrown. She wasn't wearing her seatbelt. She got thrown in the passenger seat. And she was on her phone, you know, talking to somebody, crying, and her face was all bloody. But the only thing that happened to her was she broke her nose. And that was it. And the state patrol, he said, he goes, she's lucky to be alive. He said, you know, I looked over your book. That's when we had to use paper logs. Looked over your logs, you know, you did everything right, what you said. I can see the tracks. I go, but I cited her for reckless endangerment and, you know, driving under conditions and texting. She was texting, smoking, and jamming out to the radio. You know, going through the little snow drifts. So I was like, oof. Wow. She's lucky she just broke her nose.
Yeah, she really is lucky she just broke her nose. And, you know, when you're in that kind of environment driving, you would think you're at least going to wear a seatbelt, right? I mean, like, all right, full disclosure, when I drive to work, sometimes I'm not wearing a seatbelt. I drive a 93 Ranger, and so it doesn't tell me I need to turn my seatbelt on. But yeah. And so there's days that I just don't, and I should. I know. But whenever it's raining, just raining, I can't help it. I have to buckle up. I don't feel good about it, you know? And I should buckle up all the time. But, you know, my wife gets on me about it. But, you know.
Good for her.
It is what it is. Yeah, well, that's a pretty, you know, crazy experience seeing something like that. It reminded me of, it wasn't nearly as bad, but I was doing a delivery, or I was getting ready to do a delivery going down Pennsylvania Boulevard in Trevose, Pennsylvania. And I just turned onto the boulevard, which is just really like a dead end road. It has a lot of businesses on it. And there was this lady, and it was a snowy day. I mean, I probably had about 6 inches on the ground at this point. And she is in her car and she just comes flying up this driveway. I see her coming. So I pumped my brakes, and especially in the snow. So you're in the snow and you see something moving fast. You're like, that doesn't compute. Pay attention to that, because nothing's supposed to be moving fast in the snow.
Yep.
And she comes flying down this driveway, and I have no idea what her plan was when she had to make that turn, because like you have to turn left or right to get on the drive or on the road. And she didn't do either. She just slid straight across the road, T-boned, or no, she was able to swing her car so that the passenger side slid right into another car, and she pulled forward and she gets out and she's holding her head like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And she was clearly fine. So I just kept on going. I just drove by, but I was like, what do you think just happened?
Okay,
like, what do you expect's going to happen? Like, there's literally like 6 inches of snow on the ground. I have no idea how you were even moving as fast as you were moving in that car. I think it was like a Saturn or something, you know, but, you know, you see that kind of stuff.
all the time.
So, Rob, you have that experience where, you know, that accident happened and, you know, it is what it is, but, I think you were working a rail yard or something and you were doing some fueling. What happened when you saw, well, what you saw, I don't want to give it away.
Sure. Yeah. So then, you know, I was doing the job, moving freight. I won't say what company it was. And then, you know, they weren't paying as well. And there's big oil boom in North Dakota that hit, and all the drivers were going to go move oil, you know, or gas or whatever. And so I told this freight company, I said, hey, I go, you know, cause they're paying me $11.25 an hour. And I was like, hey, I go, can I at least get like a $3 raise? I like the job or something. I know. Cause you know, to keep up with competition, you know, driving. And then they said, well, we'll think about it. And then they come back and they said, you know, then it was like 2 days later, they go, well, we got good news, but I don't think it's the news you want to hear. And I'm like, what's that? They said, well, we'll give you, we got approved for a 20-cent raise. And I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. So anyways, I went and I applied for this job where you drive a tanker. You know, I got my hazmat, because at the time I didn't have my hazmat. So I got my hazmat, which is, you know, hard to get in itself. Got your hazmat, and then started driving tanker, hauled diesel fuel, and I'd fuel up locomotives. And so what you do is we're just sitting in the shack in the yard, and they'll call us to go fuel a train if it's low on gas, or, you know, if it ran out of gas. So we hop in our truck, tractor trailer, and then we go and fuel it. So one day there was a train that came in the yard. I had to go fuel. So I hopped in my tractor trailer. I drove over, found the train. And I was working the overnight shift. And it was around 11 p.m. or so. And I was fueling this locomotive. And the locomotives, they can hold 4,400 gallons of fuel. So I'm hauling 7,200 gallons in my tanker. And I'm fueling. And there's the airport by there, maybe about 7 miles from that location. And but I knew the last flight already came in. There's only two airline flights, and they're little private planes, I guess, you know, farmers or whatever have. But you know, it was 11 o'clock, 11:30, somewhere in there, and I see this plane, and I'm like, I wonder what that plane's doing. And it's just a bright circle light, and it's flying pretty low. It's like by this elevator, you know, a grain elevator, and it's flying, and I have my headlight on. I'm like, I wonder what happened if I signal it, because I'm a sci-fi buff, right? And so I put my hand in front of my headlamp, and I just, you know, move it over and over, like kind of signaling it, because I'm just dinking around, you know. Fueling a train is like watching paint dry, you know, it takes forever and it's boring. And so I just do that, you know, and all of a sudden it like changed directions. It was going like northeast, you know, it would have went northeast, and it changed direction, started coming closer to me. And I was like, oh, maybe it's just somebody in a little private, like a Cessna or something coming up. And then I looked down, make sure I wasn't going to overflow the train. I looked down, you know, at the fuel gauge. I'm okay. So I'm looking back, you know, and I'm just watching this thing now. And it's getting closer and closer. And I'm like, usually I could hear, I know locomotives are loud, but usually you could hear a plane, you know. And I'm watching this thing, and all of a sudden it stops above my tanker. And this thing is about, I don't know, it's the same size as my tanker. It's about 48 feet long. It's a cylinder, and there's one light on the front and a red light, like a tail light almost, but it wasn't blinking. I looked for collision lights, and there's no collision lights at all on this craft. I looked for wings. There's no wings on this craft. It was complete cylinder, like a cigar. And something that I was thinking about too, you know, at first I saw this light, you know, coming towards me like headlights, and now, you know, when I looked up, the light was shining down at me. So I was like, and I got nervous, you know, I got scared, and I got on my radio, because there's the yard masters in a big tower, they can see the whole train yard. It's a large train yard. It's one of the central hubs for fueling and putting trains together and stuff. So I get on my radio and I go, I say, QRS, Yardmaster. And then this girl, come on, I won't say her name just in case she gets in trouble, but she came on and she goes, yeah, Rob. And I go, yeah, what's this thing floating above me? And she goes, well, I can't even see you. Where are you? And I'm thinking, you can't even see me. What? She has these big bay windows like an airport in this yard tower. And I'm like, I'm on track R3. I go, I'm fueling a train. And she said, nope, I can't see you. And all the carmen were gone for some reason. All the carmen were, they must have been on a lunch break all at the same time. So just me and my tractor trailer, fuel locomotive with a UFO above me. Had to have been a UFO. I was like, oh my gosh. You know, I was like nervous. And then I looked back at my fuel gauge again because I didn't want to overflow the train. And then when I looked back, it just slowly started moving, going southwest. And I was like, huh. And I kind of watched it while I was watching the fuel, looked back, and it just like left. No noise, no nothing. And that was in July. It was July 3rd because I remember people were like, you know, when we had shift change, we're like, oh, you saw one of those Chinese floating lanterns from the 4th of July. I was like, it wasn't a floating lantern because they don't change directions. They don't go against the wind, you know? So,
yeah. Well, so you had this experience where this thing came. How high was it off of the ground, like over the truck?
It was about 50 feet. About the height of a telephone pole. I'm guessing that's about 50 feet. The same height as a telephone pole above my truck. So that's why it made me a little nervous. Yeah. I got, you know, 70 gallons of diesel fuel and a locomotive with, I don't know what their cargo is.
No green men.
Well, that is crazy. I'll tell you what, I've never seen anything like that driving truck, but that is amazing. That is just really amazing.
Rob, did you, so when this happens, did anybody believe you, what you saw? Like, I mean, obviously you related to people, right?
Right. Yeah. Nobody, well, my relatives, they believe me, or, you know, I think they believe me. A lot of them just laughed it off like, ha-ha, Rob. And then some of the guys at work believe me. Some were like, oh, what you saw or whatever. But then it was like not too long afterwards. Was it a month or two? Something like that. I can't remember. We're all in the yard. We're doing our shift change. You know, there's three drivers come on. So there are six of us, you know, counting my boss. And I just got done fueling up. And here I see this, you know, like something coming from that direction again. I'm like, what? Come on. And here I'm looking, and it's just a ball of lights. Like, this is a circle, lit up circle, like a headlight. From a car. And I'm like, no way. And so I run over to the shack. I go, guys, there's a UFO out there. And they're like, yeah, right, whatever, you're crazy. And I'm like, I'm serious. And so all these guys, we all come to the door, you know, and they look out, some step out on the platform, and they're looking, and they're like, oh man. And my boss goes, I'll be dang, he's right, guys. Hey fellas, there's a UFO out here. And then we grabbed our binoculars. You know, we looked at it through binoculars, and I have night vision monocular. We looked at it through that, and it was no wings, no nothing. It was just, I don't know what it was, just a circle of light went. And then I was like, see, I told you guys. And then, you know, after that, then even the boss kind of started believing, like, huh, something's going on around here, you know.
Wow. And where was this again?
And you know what's funny is it went in the same direction as that, you know, the cylinder UFO that I saw when I was by myself fueling, it went in the same direction, like the same path. So I don't know what the heck is going on.
Did you ever get a chance to verify or talk to the lady who was working in the office in the control room at all? Like, you know, in person, like you got a chance to go in and, hey, you know, this is what I saw. Did you see anything at all? Are you sure you didn't see anything? Like, you know, to just kind of get a chance to even verify for, you know, for yourself in your own mind.
No, I couldn't talk to her at all. We weren't supposed to go, you know, bug the yard masters at all.
I gotcha.
And, but I did report that to MUFON.
Mm-hmm.
Mutual UFO Network, and they tried to contact, the state director tried to contact BNSF at the yard there, and they wouldn't respond. They wouldn't say anything, and shortly after that, like, I think it was a year later, like, they put her somewhere else, that yardmaster. She went somewhere, so I don't know what all happened to that. They don't want nobody on the property all of a sudden. They don't want nothing, you know, nobody snooping around, or we weren't supposed to talk about it, you know, stuff like that. So I don't know what the heck that was all about.
Wow. Yeah, you see, truckers see a lot of stuff.
Yes,
we do.
We look
in more than one direction. That's why, you know, a lot of times people are looking down, or they're just looking straight in front. But, you know, you're driving a truck, you got to look all, almost 360s if you could,
yep.
You know, mirrors, you looking up, down, who knows what's coming at you, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I mean, truckers, we see stuff out in the road. We see stuff that we didn't want to see. We see odd things that don't even happen on the road. I've heard people saying that this one guy I was talking to, he said that he was driving down the road and he actually saw a building collapse as he was passing by. And so, like, you see just incredible stuff while you're out in the road, and you see UFOs sometimes too. I know, yep. There's a lot of drivers out there that come across seeing these lights in the skies that they had no idea what it was. And sometimes they get really close, like your experience. What do you think? And I know this isn't my other show, The Confessionals, but I can't help but ask you this question.
Since you brought up
UFOs, what do you think UFOs are? I mean, do you think that they're from multiple different origins? I mean, you said you're part of the MUFON, so do you think that what are your thoughts on UFOs in general?
See, here's where I kind of get like twisted emotions, kind of like I don't know. I'm gonna just wait, and I'll ask God when I see him, because, you know, some people, you know, when I told them about UFOs, they're like, oh, they're demons. You know, and, you know, don't follow that stuff. They're demons that distract you from keeping your sight on Jesus, and which could be true. But I was thinking, you know, when that war in heaven came, and what was it, a third of the angels, I believe, got cast out with Lucifer down to earth. And then now they have to wait, you know, until judgment day. So, you know, if people are seeing UFOs in outer space, like the STS shuttle missions that you can, you know, go on YouTube or Google or whatever and watch these videos of the space shuttle videotaping UFOs in space. I mean, I would think that the demons or somebody, you know, I would think that they would say, let's not wait around for God to come on Earth. Let's get out of here and go to some other planet, you know?
Right.
That's what I was thinking. And I was like, so I don't think that they're demons, you know, maybe not all, maybe some aren't, I don't know. But, you know, that's what I was thinking. I was like, maybe they're, you know, they come from another world, and, you know, maybe the Bible is created for us, you know, Jesus came for us. We have to focus, you know, on the Bible and live how we have. Who's to say, you know, our God's a big God. Who's to say it's not the same on some other planet, you know, maybe, I don't know. Maybe the Bible is just for us, you know, just because it doesn't mention Saturn or, you know, Mars or, you know, all these other planets. It doesn't mention that in the Bible anywhere because they didn't know about it. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't know what people are seeing. I know people need to be careful on what they're seeing, because I think it can open up doorways for demons to use it to get to you. But then it could be, you know, just some crazy alien lost, you know. Who knows? I don't know, you know. That's my intake on it.
Maybe
we'll start rambling.
That's fine. We'll save the rambling for the confessionals. But because I'm sure you and I and my dad could have some long form conversation about this on the confessionals.
Yes.
But Rob, I'll tell you what, when you're out there on the road, keep an eye out for the green hitchhikers, man, because it seems like they have an attraction towards you. I mean, it's twice, right?
Yeah.
So have you ever done any kind of over the road stuff, or are you always home every day?
Now I'm home every day. I did do over the road when I was driving for Wiley flatbed. When I'd haul, I'd go to like state of Washington, down to South Carolina, hauling whatever. But now I get to come home every night, do my 12 hours. I do two loads a day, haul some white grade. That's just a natural gas that comes out of the, you know, when you see that flare coming out of the oil, where the oil wells are, they're trying to cap those. And then so I haul all that stuff around. But basically, I carry a 10,000-pound bomb.
That's what I was just going to say. It sounds dangerous.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that you have to consider with kind of doing that kind of hauling of material? Is there any kind of extra precautions you need to take outside of just placarding?
Make sure your seatbelt's on. Wear clean underwear.
Don't smoke.
Yeah.
So essentially, you know, just strap on, because if that thing blows, you're going for a ride.
They make you wear FR gear, but that won't help you, you know.
Well, you know,
the main thing is just watch out for the other drivers, you know, like the four wheelers or the, you know, the vehicles, the cars, yeah, automobiles. Watch out for them, and, you know, and water haulers. Just kidding, water haulers.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, like, the GE company, GE Water, they just changed their name not too long ago to Suez. And I deliver sometimes to that company in Bensalem, Pennsylvania. And every time I do a delivery there, 90% of the time I'm delivering these blue drums. And it's usually four on a pallet. And I usually deliver anywhere between 2 to 4 pallets of these things. And I've done it several times, and I never thought anything about it. I knew it was hazmat, placard my truck, whatever. And yeah, the guy tells me, the one time him and I got to talking, and he says, "Hey, listen, I'm just telling you, giving you a heads up. If you ever see these drums with the slightest leak," he said, "get away from it as fast as possible and call 911. And I'm like, "Why?" And he said, "Because the liquid that we have in these drums, if they are exposed to air, they will explode." And he said that they explode to the point where it will leave a crater in the ground. And he said, "So if it ever leaks and you're still breathing, get the heck away from it, call 911 and get everybody away, because the thing could blow at any second." He said, when they empty the drums out, they actually have a very specific process that they do it that transfers the liquid from the drums to wherever they need it to be without being exposed to any air. And so that scared the crap out of me. And so I went back to the terminal and I started telling the dock workers that load those drums on the trailers to tell them, "Listen, when you're dealing with these blue drums, yeah, just be careful. Like, it's not a matter of, oh, we had a hazmat spill, I could get suspended or get fired. It's a matter of people losing their lives straight up. If that thing leaks, we're in trouble." And I was thinking to myself, like, why are we transporting this? Like, I have no desire. Like, there's so many things that could go wrong. It's almost a matter of when. And I'm not talking about just my coming, but I'm just saying in general, like, there's got to be something special for this, because when you have people loading the trucks, it's not the same person loading those drums every day. So now you have to inform the entire guys about these drums. How many times do you have new guys that come in that aren't familiar with loading in general, let alone something like that, who maybe are still learning what hazmat is? They're not even totally sure, you know? And so it's like, it's a little nerve wracking to think that maybe I have one of those loads where you open the trailer door and your first delivery is five skids, and it's blocking your view from what's behind it, only to find out you have four skids of these blue drums that weren't strapped in or something. And maybe they were put on a crappy pallet that had a nail sticking out. You know, it's like, there's so many things that could go wrong with that product. I just don't understand why it's legal to be shipping it LTL.
Yeah.
You'd think that there would be some way that they would, you know, they would use special companies that move that kind of stuff, you know, rather than just a common carrier. I mean, we're called a common carrier.
Right.
For a reason.
It's like, with stuff like that, you would think, okay, we know what this is, so there's a specific type of company that we have to ship with this stuff, because their drivers, their workers are specifically trained to know all about the stuff that we deal with.
Yeah.
But like LTL common carriers, it's like, okay, it's a, it has a flammable sign on it. That's nice. Everything has a flammable sign. We don't know what's inside of it. You know, right. We just know it's flammable.
Or how flammable.
It's like, it's not just a flammable, just like what we need is a flammable sticker. And then right next to it as like a secondary, a nuke. Just have the word Hiroshima on it. You know? Get the point across.
This
is very highly explosive. Don't let it drain on anything. So, but I could go on. I have so many stories that I don't even know that I have these stories.
You don't realize you've been doing it long enough that you have enough stories that you know you've seen enough. It just takes a little bit of time till you get to that point, you know?
Yeah. I'll tell you one more story that I'm thinking about now that we're talking about explosives. And this is kind of relating to you a little bit in the sense, Dad, where Tyler, one of the supervisors at my terminal used to work at your terminal as a dock worker. And if I remember this story correctly, and maybe you'll remember this better than I would, there was a trailer that caught fire at your terminal years ago and it had explosives on it.
Yeah.
And
had flammable stuff on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was Tyler that got hooked up the yard horse and pulled the trailer away from the terminal while it's on fire. Yeah,
that's a long time ago.
But like, it's like one of those things where it's like, hey, that's good, quick thinking, but don't ever do that again.
Exactly.
It's like, you could have died, you know? Yeah. But, it's one of those things where we're dealing in an industry where it's very hazardous from the stuff that we haul to the roads that we're on, to the people around us on the roads, to the UFOs flying around in the sky.
Exactly.
Like there are a lot of things that could go wrong with what we do. And, we're here sharing stories for people to, under the general public that would listen to this show and truckers to be reminded that it's a very dangerous job. And we're just, as entertaining as it is to hear truckers share the stories and people who drive for a living, it's also an informative kind of show where we're informing the public and people how dangerous it is, what we do. And so that they're aware. Because, simple things like, hey, if it's downpouring rain, we typically can't see what's in our mirrors. And so if you're driving down the road and you don't have your headlights on, that's a very hazardous situation.
Yes, it is.
For you. Because if we have to move and we don't know you're there, you're like a piece of paper.
Yep.
We won't even feel you. I mean, if we get you on a 53-foot trailer on the back tandems, we're not even going to feel that.
Yep.
And it's just, you're a little Honda Civic. I'm sorry. We won't even know it happened.
Yes.
And so it's being very aware of what we're dealing with so that you can be safe as well as us.
That's exactly right.
Yep. That's it.
Well, Rob, before we get out of here and stuff, do you have any other things you'd like to share with us?
I was thinking about this, when you're talking about, other people listening that maybe they're not truckers, is like, one of my friends once said, "Oh, you don't work. You just sit and drive truck. You don't work." And I'm like, "Don't tell truck drivers they don't work."
You got that right.
They do a lot.
Yeah,
a lot more goes on than just sitting and drinking coffee while you're driving.
Yes,
because some states you can't even drink coffee now if they catch you.
Wow, I'm glad it's not like that in Pennsylvania. Holy cow, half the trucking population would be falling asleep. They'd have to pull over every 10 minutes and take a nap.
Are they looking for more accidents?
I know. Well, you have to sleep. That's the number one thing to do, not the coffee.
Yeah. Get out and stretch your legs. Right. Okay.
Yeah, right.
But make sure you don't run out of hours. Okay.
Yeah.
Stop your truck, but don't stop your truck. Get there on time. Yeah. Don't run out of hours.
Those are the people that you want to grab a hold of, put in the jump seat and say, like, you come with me and I want you to experience what we do and how long you're sitting and how long you're in this thing and the stress that you go through sitting here. You know, it's funny. People think like you were saying there, Rob, you don't do anything but, shine a seat with your rear end all night long.
Yep.
I go home and I'm tired in the morning, especially in the wintertime when it's snowing and you got ice and you got all the things you're dealing with, you got rush hour traffic you're dealing with, and who knows what your load looks like all night long. Are you heavy? Is it light? Is it heavy? All the things that are running through your head. And you go home, you're tired. You are exhausted. But, you know, it's like, and people don't realize this, but when you talk to enough people who are driving for, you know, they're going away on vacation, they're going to drive across the state or they're going to drive across the country, and all of a sudden they get out of their car and they're like, I am so tired and all I did was drive. Yeah. All you did was drive and you are tired. It's a stressful thing to do. It's
right.
A very stressful job. And when you do this on a constant basis, like, I've been doing it for 27 years. You know, you've been doing it for a long time, Rob. You know, Tony's been doing it for a few years. It's a stressful job and it wears you out. It really does. You know, I'm looking forward to retirement at some point. And when I retire, I don't want to drive. I'm not driving anywhere. I'm not coming back to do part-time driving. I'm not doing any kind of driving. I'm getting myself a job at Walmart as a greeter. You know, I don't want to drive anything. But, you know, I also wanted to come back to the whole, the UFO thing. And, you know, this is the thing I think about sometimes, Rob, when it comes to these things, is I look at these things like, you know what? Your answer is just as valid as anybody else's answer because we really don't know. And I'm with you. I'm willing to wait and ask God when I get there. And that's okay with me. I don't mind that. And I just wanted to jump back. So I was thinking about that when Tony had asked you, what do you think these things are? And you're, you know, kind of giving your answer. And it's like, yeah, you know what? That's just as valid as anybody else's thoughts or anybody else's ideas on this because we don't know. It's an unknown. So I'm okay with that. And I'm okay with not knowing some things. I can take some things on faith and just, you know, walk along. And when I get there, I get there and I'll ask God, you know, I'll find out.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
All right, driver. Well, thanks for coming on the show and sharing your experiences, man, and just chopping it up with us. It's been a good time, man. And listen, I'm really looking forward to having you on the confessionals to kind of dive deeper into your experiences as a MUFON investigator. And I think you said you were a MUFON like regional director or something like that, too. I mean, either way, I'm looking forward to having that conversation with you, man. And thanks for being on Hammer Lane Legends, brother.
You bet. Thank you. Yep. Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot, Rob. You take care.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And do us a favor, if you did enjoy it, please share the show. It doesn't matter where you share a show, but if you enjoyed it, please share the show. And until next Monday, drivers, keep the hammer down in the Hammer Lane.
Just sitting on your front porch, wondering how could I be so far from my home. And my mind is somewhere else, but when I find it, I'll patch up where it's been blown. Now I'm just floating on the breeze, and I feel I'm falling like these leaves. I must be cornerstone. Oh, but when I reach that ground, I'll share this peace of mind I found. I can feel it in my bones, but it's gonna take a little time for me to set that parking brake and let myself unwind. Shine that light. Tell you my stories. Shine on me, and I will find a song. I will sing it just for you. And now I've been moving way too fast on the runaway train with a heavy load of my so thin that they're damn near gone. I guess now they just weren't built to last. Yeah, I'm gonna try to make sense of what I can.